Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 13, 2016. The U.S. government is engaging South Sudanese leaders to restore peace in the country.
We're focused now on reestablishing security, stability within Juba. We're quite alarmed with the violence that has taken place. Our immediate focus has been to ensure that there is an end to the fighting.
And a VOA journalist offers a first-hand account of what it takes to travel out of South Sudan by road this week.
Yesterday, what I saw was that the road was deserted. There were only a few military vehicles on the road, and there were several roadblocks on the road manned by security forces. And I also saw that there were vehicles that had been attacked by armed people the previous day.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. State Department says the U.S. government is working with leaders in the East African region to restore peace in South Sudan. The acting director in the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Andrew Bennett, says top U.S. government officials are talking to South Sudanese leaders to end the fighting and implement the August peace deal signed by President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar. The U.S. military has deployed about 40 soldiers to South Sudan's capital following 4 days of clashes that left hundreds of people dead and raised fears of a renewed civil war. The U.S. military's Africa Command says the troops were sent to Juba to safeguard the U.S. embassy and help carry out a State Department order for non-essential personnel to leave the country. Bennett says at the moment, the U.S. government is putting more effort into addressing security challenges within the South Sudanese capital.
We're focused now on reestablishing security, stability within Juba. We're quite alarmed with the violence that has taken place. Our immediate focus has been to ensure that there is an end to the fighting. We have a ceasefire announced by both the SPLM, the government, and the SPLM in opposition, and we're pressing both sides to adhere to that. We've had a day or two where it's been relatively calm, and only sporadic reports of violence, and we're pressing all sides to continue that. As you mentioned, Ambassador Booth, Ambassador Fee and Juba have been tremendously active, as have officials in Washington, engaging the region and leaders in Juba to see an end to this fighting.
The events unfolding from Juba, I mean, the government announced a ceasefire and Riek Machar's group also announced a ceasefire, but there are still reports of sporadic insecurity around the country. Do you see South Sudan sliding back to a full-scale war?
Well, we certainly hope not. And we've called for not just the implementation of the ceasefire in Juba. The most recent ceasefire is announced over the weekend to bring the fighting that took place late last week on Sunday under control, but throughout South Sudan. And I think we're quite concerned with reports about fighting in Wau, in Leer State, elsewhere throughout South Sudan. I think it's critical that all South Sudanese parties and all armed groups understand the ceasefire and the importance of not allowing this to spread any further. And to make sure that it's upheld and that there can be necessary humanitarian access to address the suffering of those that have been affected by this violence and elsewhere in South Sudan.
And what are the plans for U.S. citizens who could be trapped in Juba and other parts of the country?
We've been in touch with as many as we can. We've been putting out, issued our travel warning and emergency messages, and we've been reaching out to as many American citizens and others as possible. They're encouraged to register and be in touch with the U.S. Embassy, and we've encouraged all to make sure that they are taking their own safety precautions, planning their own evacuation if necessary, and sheltering in place as much as possible. As we've stated before, the U.S. Embassy is operational. It's functioning. The ambassador and leadership remain in place. We've gone into an order departure where some certain non-emergency staff have departed, and we've introduced some security personnel to secure the embassy. But we remain operational and engaged with American citizens and other partners about the security situation and doing what we can to help.
The IGAD countries met in Nairobi yesterday. The IGAD Council of Ministers met there, and one of the resolutions was that there was a need for putting up a force, a rapid response force that could help de-escalate the situation in Juba. Mm-hmm. What is the U.S. government doing in regard to that? Are you considering putting boots on the ground in Juba?
IGAD, foreign ministers, as well as the African Union Peace and Security Council have both met and issued statements that that called for sustained ceasefire in Juba, an end to the violence, and encouraged that the UN Security Council expanded the authorized number of troops under the UN mission in South Sudan and included a stabilization force to provide immediate security within Juba to bring the situation under control. The Security Council is meeting and is looking at and discussing this recommendation and how we can better support the UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, to protect civilians and to address the situation and to bring security under in Juba and under better control. We're working closely with our neighbors in the region. The Secretary has been in touch with leaders in Kenya, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Uganda. We're working closely with the region and with IGAD. Ambassador Booth is in Addis Ababa right now, and we'll also be engaging with them as they head to Kigali for the AU summit. So we're in close touch with the region and working on this the next steps to help stabilize Juba.
The U.S. has been close to the people of South Sudan for ages, and a lot of people in Juba that I've spoken to have been asking me, what is the U.S. government doing to get us out of this problem? And I would like to put this question to you.
Well, yeah, and I'd like to reassure them we're deeply committed to resolving this crisis and finding a sustainable end to this conflict. We remain committed to addressing the humanitarian crisis as well that continues and was going on before this took place in Juba and will continue. Right now, the focus is on seeing an end to fighting. That's our focus both in our engagement in Juba and elsewhere in South Sudan, as well as in the UN Security Council. And seeing the guns fall silent.
That's Andrew Burnett, the acting director in the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to me at the State Department here in Washington. Tomorrow we'll air a second part of the interview where Burnett talks about U.S. long-term plans for South Sudan. This program is sponsored by the office of the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. The UN Security Council met to discuss South Sudan today. The French ambassador to the United Nations, François Delatte, says the first priority is to make sure that both parties are committed to the peace process and that they adhere to the ceasefire.
We cannot procrastinate anymore, and we have to use two of the leverages that we have, meaning number one, to establish the arms embargo. It's past due time to do it, and we are strongly in favor of it. And number two, to establish sanctions against those who are responsible for violence, but also against those who oppose the implementation of the peace agreement.
Delatte says his priority is to provide more support for the UN mission in South Sudan by reinforcing the mission with additional peacekeepers. The UN Security Council released a statement today saying the United Nations is encouraging states in the region to prepare to provide additional troops in the event the Security Council decides to approve the move. A UNHCR spokesperson in Uganda is asking authorities in South Sudan to allow residents who fled Juba to cross into Uganda. Charlie Yaxley says thousands of people trying to leave South Sudan after the recent wave of deadly violence have been trapped in Nimule. He is calling on the belligerent parties to allow South Sudanese who are fleeing. Mungume Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Kigali.
UNHCR spokesman Charles Yaxley says the South Sudan government should ensure that those fleeing violence are granted free movement across the borders.
As far as we're aware, the border remains closed on the South Sudan side. We're seeing some numbers coming in, but less than we're expecting, bearing in mind the recent violence. And as soon as the border does open, we expect hundreds, if not thousands, of people to arrive within the matter of a few days.
According to UN OCHA, the fighting has displaced more than 36,000 people since Friday. At least 7,000 South Sudanese have sought shelter at UN bases in Juba. Yaxley also says insecurity along the roads is a major problem for residents trying escaping the violence.
On the Juba to Nimule road, the main road to Uganda, we understand there's a series of roadblocks and checkpoints that have been put in place that are preventing people from moving freely. Other refugees have reported traveling by bus and having their bus robbed at gunpoint and having all their possessions stolen.
The UNHCR spokesperson says people who are desperate to get out are crossing the border through the bush and other illegal routes. He says at least 1,200 South Sudanese have come to the UNHCR in Uganda seeking protection in recent days. He says the UNHCR and other humanitarian agencies are providing food, shelter, water and sanitation facilities for those who have managed to cross the border.
We're providing aid at the moment to those that have crossed the border and at the same time urging countries to ensure that these people are given safe passage, that all people fleeing fighting are given safe passage and that borders are kept open for people to use to seek asylum.
Yaxley says other South Sudanese refugees have fled to neighboring Kenya and Ethiopia. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
Our Juba Bureau editor, Charlton Doki, offered his own account of what he saw on his journey from Juba to Kampala, Uganda. Charlton left the capital at 10 a.m. local time yesterday and arrived in Kampala at 5 a.m. today, a trip that normally takes about 10 hours by bus. He tells South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam that the Juba-Nimule road is mostly deserted with exception of soldiers manning several checkpoints.
This is normally a busy road with so many vehicles, but yesterday what I saw was that the road was deserted. There were only a few military vehicles on the road, and there were several roadblocks on the road manned by security forces. And I also saw that there were vehicles that had been attacked by armed people the previous day, and many of them had been shot at and destroyed, while the others had been burned completely.
Did they look like regular civilian cars that were just abandoned and there was some kind of altercation, obviously, and the people just left?
Yes. So from speaking to people that I met at the border, at the Ugandan border, they told me that these vehicles had been attacked by armed people. It's not very clear who these armed people are, but they are people who simply came from the bush and began to shoot at these vehicles. And what they also did was they looted the travelers. They had been made to undress and they were checked thoroughly to see that they were not hiding any money. If you had any valuables, it was taken.
When you say if they had cell phones, money, anything was taken, and you have these armed checkpoints by soldiers, who's doing the looting? Is it the soldiers or is it some vigilante groups that have come jumping out of the bush or what?
So the people who are doing this looting and the shooting and attacking of vehicles are vigilantes who are unidentified. But also the security people who are manning these roadblocks are extorting money from people. Yesterday, we had to literally buy our way out of South Sudan because we had to pay at every checkpoint. At one checkpoint, you could be asked to pay £500, £1,000, and so on. They were also taking away people's cell phones and any other valuables. At one of the roadblocks, the security people there wanted to detain our vehicle, but we had to pay some money for it to be released.
How much money did you go through, all in all, to get through and to make your way to Kampala from Juba?
The vehicle that I traveled in, we were 10 people in that particular vehicle, and every one of us paid at least the equivalent of $150 from where we started the journey to where we ended.
That's a lot of money. Is it your feeling or estimation that this is sanctioned by the government or that these soldiers are acting on their own?
I think the soldiers are acting on their own because some of us were telling that, you know, you people are running away and, you know, we are not even paid salaries and where do you expect us to get money? So they were saying, you foreigners have been making money in South Sudan and now that there is war, you're running away, you're taking away the money that you've been making in this country. So I think that the soldiers are acting on their own. They are not being directed by anybody.
What was your feeling of what was happening to the South Sudanese citizens who, unfortunately, they did not have a Ugandan passport or any other kind of passport?
What was happening is that they were barring South Sudanese from leaving the country. Right from the first roadblock, some of the colleagues that we had traveled with were stopped. They were asked to return to Juba because they had South Sudanese passports, and the security people were asking them, why are you leaving Juba? The fighting has already ended. Why are you going out of this country? That continued all along the way. Some of the colleagues who were South Sudanese were paying some, you know, they paid their way through some of the roadblocks. But when they got to Nimule, they were completely stopped from crossing the border.
Were you saying that some of the people that were traveling with you, the 10 people in the car, were stopped and had to turn back?
Yes. So we traveled in a convoy of three vehicles. But in my vehicle, the vehicle that I sat in, one South Sudanese was asked to return. In the second vehicle, there were also two South Sudanese who were asked to go back to Juba. And in the third vehicle, two South Sudanese who had paid their way up to the border were detained at the border, and we left them on the South Sudanese side of the border.
Did you see any violence occurring during this entire travel of yours to Kampala from Juba?
I did not see any direct violence occurring, but from speaking to people, I understand that the previous day, six vehicles had been shot at and some of them burned, and that people got injured. At some point along the way, when we were about to get to Nimule, like 10 kilometers from Nimule, our vehicle ran out of fuel. And I had to get onto a motorbike to go to Nimule to get fuel. But as that was happening, we had some gunshots a short distance from where we were, about 2 kilometers. And in about an hour's time, we realized that a vehicle had been shot. And so we waited at the border, and when these people came through, I saw some of the injured people. The vehicle was a minibus, and it had been shot at several times. There were gun bullets all over, and three people had been injured. And they had blood on their bodies, but the driver managed to drive through the bullets and was even able to cross to the Ugandan side of the border.
That's our South Sudan in Focus bureau editor, Charlton Doki, speaking to Carol Van Damme earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Local officials confirmed that young people have been abducted in Ezo County. We'll have more on that story after this.
Political conventions are a critical part of the American electoral process. Our job is to put the conventions, the candidates, and the issues into context for our listeners. Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's conventions starting July 18th on VOA.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the most interesting thing you have learned this year?
Life is short, so if you have friends, be with them, help them out, and let them also help you out. Don't keep things to yourself.
Trusting people. I think given the chance, people will do right, and people will go out of their way if they know you trust them enough.
I have learned that we should try and be humble as people, because you don't know who is watching.
The most interesting thing that I learned this year is that whenever you have an opportunity to earn, you have to invest. You enlarge your mind. When you enlarge your mind, you find you're achieving a lot of things.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Civil society activists are appealing to President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to restore law and order to the capital so that displaced citizens can safely return to their homes. The Voluntary Civil Society Task Force told reporters in Juba today that the recent armed violence has caused more suffering to civilians already traumatized by more than 2 years of conflict. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The task force, a coalition of 20 civil society, faith-based organizations, says the eruption of armed violence has frightened and disappointed citizens. Members of the task force say they are concerned with the magnitude of the destruction, the loss of lives, and the suffering inflicted on the civil population. The partners to the August peace agreement acknowledged that the ceasefire orders issued by President Kiir and Vice President Machar seems to be holding. Rajaf Mohandes, executive director for the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says he worries about the eager Council of Ministers' suggestion to increase the number of foreign troops in South Sudan.
The task force is, however, concerned with the emplacement of the airport under the protection of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. The task force is further concerned with the demand to establish an intervention brigade and increase the number of troops from the region to, inter alia, secure Juba.
The voluntary peace partner says the security arrangements in the peace agreement should be implemented immediately, which calls for a total cessation of hostilities. Merkaji Lona, Secretary General of the South Sudan Democratic Engagement Monitoring and Observation Program, says leaders in the country should make sure that the rights of civilians are protected and respected.
I want to call upon the leadership of this country to be able to have control on the forces, because the general assumption from the citizens is that the forces, the army in this country, is supposed to protect us. And when we see lives being killed, when we see properties being looted, it is heartbreaking.
Lona says the task force is still optimistic the country's peace will hold because no one has withdrawn their signature from the agreement. Task force member and peace activist Kenyi Isaac says they hope for full implementation of the peace agreement from both sides.
We are yet to see, until today, President Kiir, who is the primary signatory, and Dr. Riek Machar, who is also the primary, telling us that they have now abandoned the agreement, then we will say the agreement has collapsed. But up to this moment, I must say agreement still holds, and we are hoping for rapid implementation of the agreement.
On Monday, the Intergovernmental Agency on Development recommended the establishment of an intervention brigade within the UN mission in South Sudan. The creation of the brigade will empower armies with a mandate to fight and control hostile groups, as opposed to only being a peacekeeping force. Fighting raged across Juba for a fifth day on Monday, leaving hundreds of South Sudanese dead and thousands displaced. The United Nations Security Council has called on the leaders in South Sudan to control their rival forces and warned that ongoing attack on civilians and UN facilities may constitute war crimes. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
From Juba, we move to the former Western Equatoria state where residents of Ezo are fleeing into the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo, afraid that more young men and women will be abducted by armed youth who are active in the area. The Ezo County Commissioner confirms that nearly 30 youth have been abducted over the past few days. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Yambio.
Ezo resident John Piga says most people have fled the town.
Situation in Ezo County, I can describe it as horrible, because as I talk right now, there are less than 20 individual houses now living within the town. Almost everybody has packed their things and went to the bush, others to Congo, and the way people have even migrated, I don't think they will come soon.
Piga says people are fleeing the town in fear of more attacks and kidnappings of young people by armed youth. He says all the major roads linking Ezo to Yambio and Tombora counties have been closed. Piga says in order to access Yambio, one has to cross through Dorema in the DR Congo. He says the price of goods has shot up in recent days.
The few things things that the traders manage to bring from Yambio here, like soap, like salt, like soda, almost finishing. I'm sure when these things will even get finished, we are going to be in a very terrible situation, which we don't know how we shall come out of it.
As a resident, John Bamira says, people began fleeing the town last Friday when reports circulated of abductions in Bagidi Payam. Speaking in Arabic, Bamira says the remaining people in Ezo think the government has lost control.
A lot of bad thoughts have entered our minds. It is like Ezo is not under the government of South Sudan. All roads are closed, and up to August, it will be a difficult issue. Children are dying from a lot of things. No medicines, no food. People are sleeping in coldness and under the trees.
Bamira says the government should act now to rescue the people of Ezo County from the hands of the armed group. Ezo County has been racked by insecurity since November of last year when fighting broke out between the vigilante group and government forces in the former Western Equatoria state. Ezo County Commissioner Luciano Bakinde confirms reports of abductions. Speaking from his residence in Yambio, Bakinde says more than 20 young people have been abducted from one Payam alone.
People of Ezo have run away from their own sons who are in the bush. They are abducting boys and children to the bush now. In Bagidi Payam, they abducted 22. In Borogu, they abducted 8. And then in the town itself, around the town, they abducted 4. As a result, the people have decided to run away. Almost Ezo town is empty, leaving only the organized forces in the town.
Commissioner Bakinde says those that remain in Ezo are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. He says efforts by county officials and local chiefs to hold talks with the armed group have gone nowhere.
There is a need for help, for support by the international community to intervene. If the international community does not intervene, I'm sure it will take us a long time to open the road to Ezo, because the closing of the road is not an easy thing.
The Jebio Ezo road was closed 2 weeks ago by armed youth who cut down large trees along the road, blocking all transportation into and out of Ezo town. State officials had said earlier that they were planning to open the roads, but trees still block the road. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Yambio.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kibas featuring Young Bow. We have been listening to Kebas featuring Young Bo with the song Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.